This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back in for the Lions 24-7 podcast. I am Tyler Donahue. He is Sean Fitz coming to you live from Happy Valley. And I'll tell you what, you can feel the pressure ramping up on this Penn State football program as they make their way toward game number 11. 6-4 on the season, ready to face the 5-5 Scarlet Knights of Rutgers. We'll have a chance to break down Rutgers in greater detail on this episode with Bobby Darin, who covers that program for 24/7 Sports Scarlet Nation. This is a team at Rutgers looking for bowl eligibility, a rare thing for them, but also very tricky to figure out. They have had some peaks and valleys recently in Big Ten play. We'll hear about them from Bobby in a moment. But focusing right here, Sean, I said it, pressure is intensifying. Felt like the pressure was mounting after the Illinois matchup, understandably. And now, with a couple weeks left in the regular season and still the external noise happening and hearing from James Franklin again on Tuesday, it's getting very difficult to ignore.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of distractions out there, and I think that there's, you know, a lot of that is you know, stuff that they can control and stuff, and some of it's not. So you're always going to have that, but yeah, it's about the next one up, and this is a step on the throat game, to be honest with you. And this is one where you're the better team. You go in as a heavy favorite. You know, probably would expect a little bit more, but it's really one of those situations where you just have to kind of block all that out and just take control. And the last time that we saw that was against Maryland. They did an okay job. The time before that was Illinois. Obviously that's not the direction that they want to go to, but this is a week where you have to establish yourself as the better team. And you know, you're not going to get a lot of credit if you go out and beat Rutgers, but at the same time, you got to put yourself back on track. And that means asserting your will, you know, being dominant over a program that you should be dominant over. And right now it's very much up in the air, because this is a game that you know, they should win. This is a game that they've also had on their schedule before and not won. So really, really tricky line to walk here. James Franklin looks tired once again. He looks distracted a little bit in his press conference once again. Again, when they get back on the field this week, they'll probably, you know, a lot of that will take care of itself. But at the same time, it's tough to watch, because you thought this team was you know, would put itself in a better position and block out the noise and use that 1-0 mantra. And it seems like you see that bleeding over every week.
You're starting to hear a lot of the same lines over again. And I know that happens at this point in the season, whether a team's winning or losing, you start to hear some of the same things, but it's regarding some really apparent issues for this program. It's about looking for this step forward from the ground game. It's about searching for explosive plays from the offense. It's about Franklin pointing to his track record over the past 8 seasons when asked about really next season. And so those things have built up and really dating back to September. And you said you want, you know, it's time for Penn State to go out and dominate a team. I think it's probably been since that October 2nd matchup against Indiana, where you could say they really had their way with the team. They shut them out. They actually went over 200 rushing yards. That's 46 days ago, Sean.
Had their way on both sides of the ball. That's the thing.
Yeah, that's like what I mean. Yeah.
The defense has been very good. Very, you know, they've been great. They've put themselves in a position to win pretty much all of those games. But then again, you got to be out there. You got to be scoring points these days. And that's not asking you to go out and score 42 points. That's asking you to go out and score 24, 20, you know, and that's really kind of where the floor has been the last couple of years. And you're not getting there this time. And I understand there's a lot that goes into that, but at the same time, you have a lot of talent on this roster. Are you maximizing that? That's a good question.
Yeah, and it starts with your trigger man in this matchup, Sean Clifford at quarterback. Franklin described him as beat up by Michigan, which I think anyone who watched the game could have applied the same phrasing to. 7 sacks. Franklin said 5 other hits aside from the sacks. That sounds about right. A dozen total shots on your quarterback from Wolverine's defenders over the course of that matchup. And I mentioned this last podcast, 3 runs of 10-plus yards in the first quarter for Sean Clifford. 2 of them move the chains. You're thinking this is an element that we have not witnessed from Penn State in 6 weeks offensively. By the end of the game, that aspect was removed from what Sean Clifford could do for you and from what this offense could get out of its quarterback. And you know, you wonder, where is he going to be? I don't know if it was a if it's a regression toward where he was from a health standpoint, because clearly he was in a good spot health-wise entering the Michigan matchup. I don't know if this is an attrition thing on the same injury or if there's new things that could pop up, but I'll be very curious, starting with our peak at practice on Wednesday and certainly going through pregame warmups on Saturday, how effective is Sean Clifford as a runner, as a guy who can evade some pressure? Rutgers does not do a good job at all of applying pressure. We'll talk about that with Bobby Darin in a little bit. So probably a good week to face a defense like this. But we've already seen what it looks like when Sean Clifford is severely limited. That happened against Illinois, and we all thought Penn State was going to handle its business in a big way against Illinois.
Yeah, two times he's been at his best this season. They protected him like gold against Auburn, and you know he lit them up and kind of picked them apart, which we're not accustomed to seeing Sean Clifford do. And then at Iowa that first quarter, you mentioned the three runs over 10 yards against Michigan. That's exactly what he did against Iowa. And when he was able to run around and move and do some things, they had a lot of success despite the two turnovers that they had. That first quarter is still a complete anomaly. I'm sorry, I was thinking of another word, but a complete anomaly of what should happen on a football field. But no, it's one of those things where you're not sure how much you're going to get out of him, how much you're going to squeeze out of him, and how much you can lean on him. And you're right, Rutgers does not get to the quarterback. They got three sacks in Big Ten play, 17 for the year. But it's really tough to consider them a dominant line of scrimmage team, as Bobby Darin will tell you coming up from Scarlet Nation. So this is a game that Penn State should maybe try to assert their will, or they'll try to assert their will, but they'll maybe have some success with it. And it's, I don't think it's going to make anybody feel better in terms of the Penn State side of things, but if you can do, or if you are in this position and you don't do it, that's a huge red flag right there.
While Sean Clifford has not been asked to be that major factor on the ground, like we've seen him at different points in his career and earlier this season, they have thrown a lot on his shoulders, specifically his throwing shoulder, since he came back from injury. Sean, he's averaging 44 pass attempts in the last four games since returning from that injury, 18 sacks accrued along the way, seven, of course, against Michigan, but four in another game, three in another game, 18. And he's dropping back a lot. And we've already talked ad nauseum about the lack of an ability for him to consistently turn around, give the ball to a running back, and think you're going to stay on schedule consistently as an offense. It's just a really tough spot to put a quarterback who, as your head coach just phrased it, was beat up last Saturday.
So I think the good news here is it's not really scheme that's doing that. I mean, it's not like they are confused by all these stunts and blitzes and everything like that. They just got their asses kicked off the edge. I mean, let's be honest. You look at what Ajabo and Hutchinson were able to do, and phenomenal efforts there. And you know, certainly criticism warranted for Rasheed Walker and Caden Wallace. But yeah, it's not anything crazy. That's also the bad news, and that Rutgers is going to come out and maybe try and just do the exact same thing. Greg Schiano is a phenomenal defensive coach. You know, they don't have the dudes to get it done like Michigan did. But if you're finding yourself at halftime and you've got two sacks, three sacks, something like that, that's a big, big problem. So we'll see how Penn State adjusts to that. And I think that's kind of good news, because you know, you can get away with, you know, Michigan can get away with rushing four and getting to the quarterback. I don't think Rutgers can do that. So I think that's a positive for Penn State. You're going to see what they're able to do, maybe get a little bit more time. Big plays have been a part of what Rutgers, you know, in the games that Rutgers, they're 5-5, but they've been blown out quite a bit by the good teams in the Big Ten by big plays. And, you know, going to mention it later in the podcast, but 274 yards passing for Wisconsin, which is crazy to think about that Wisconsin team throwing for that much. So you have opportunities, you have the ability to get your playmakers into space, give them a little bit more time. And if Sean Clifford has a little bit more time, I think they'll be okay. It's just a matter of getting there, getting those first 14 points on the board. As we just, I mean, that was so key in the matchup against Illinois. You put 14 points on the board, that team can't come back. Rutgers is a similar offense in which they don't score a ton. So I think you have the recipe to get where you need to be, and make this a win that is comfortable. You just got to be able to step on the gas early and get there.
This has never been, for whatever reason, a series that Penn State, whether it's Trace McSorley or a healthy Sean Clifford, they do not show up to this matchup and put a bunch of points on the board offensively. You go back to the 2017 matchup, 35-6. They put it on in late in that game, 20-7, 27-6, 23-7. Those are the recent scores in this matchup. And we know right now Penn State not running or the ball at nearly at the level that they were doing at the end of last season when they traveled to Piscataway. They got a good performance that day from Kevon Lee, from Devin Ford, from Will Levis. It was kind of a lot on the ground and not much else on a windy day in Piscataway. And you just don't think right now, even against this Rutgers team, you're not giving Penn State the benefit of the doubt that they'll be able to accomplish something like that at this stage of the season. And that leads us right back to something we've talked about a lot, the offensive line. Caden Wallace did speak with us on a media call on Tuesday. Not an easy week for any offensive lineman to do that, and certainly for Caden Wallace, and thought he handled himself well. He talked about the tough lessons learned and carrying them forward. He was asked, by the way, long-term, does he see himself as a guard? Does he see himself as a tackle? What makes the most sense? Says it's not something that he's really thinking about. And that was about it on that subject. But in terms of this matchup, yeah, if you're not feeling the experience of growing pains and you're not feeling uncomfortable in that offensive line room from Phil Troutwine on down this week, you're not picking up the right vibes around the situation, and you're not being honest with yourself. You know, he was asked, and I say he, Caden Wallace was asked, is there something definitive that you can maybe put your finger on about why the rushing game has gone from producing 240 yards plus in 5 of the 9 games last year when defenses were having some issues during a pandemic year? Let's point that out. But to where they are now, not mustering anything, and 100 yards is a big deal. He was pretty much speechless, and that's really where we heard from Rasheed Walker a couple weeks ago when asked that question. I don't have an answer for you. Period. Kind of one sentence and that's it. And you're not expecting someone to write up a diagram on what's not working, but the level of frustration that must exist right now for a group that has a bunch of starting experience from last year's team. You've got a senior coming in from Harvard who this is shaped up as his big launch pad moment or his last hurrah playing the Power Five game. And then you've got Juice Scruggs finally stepping up, former top ranked Pennsylvania prospect. And I think Juice has done quite well for himself, and I'm curious to see if he sticks at center moving forward. But I think collectively, there were just so much more expectations. You weren't throwing out a bunch of guys who've never played together or never played college level football and keeping your fingers crossed. And this was year two with Troutwine. And that is exactly why, when you think, aside from James Franklin, where is the intense pressure being placed right now? It's on Phil Troutwine's doorstep in year number two after being hired away from Boston College.
Are you moonlighting for Pro Football Focus? I saw the Juice Scruggs thing. You see the Juice Scruggs thing yesterday where he hasn't allowed a sack all year or whatever?
I did not, but that's a nugget. That's a nugget.
That was certainly a nugget. And it's a good one. But yeah, I mean there's no answer for that offensive line. Worst part about this is I think they're gonna be able to run the ball this week. I think they will run the ball this week. And I think everybody's gonna say, where's that been all year? I think that's more a product of the matchup and product of what they're gonna try to do. We don't have any. Caden Wallace is speechless. Rasheed Walker speechless. We're speechless. Unfortunately, we're a podcast, so we can't be speechless. I just don't know where to put it. You're wondering where Mike Miranda's health is going to be. And like you said, we'll probably know a little bit more about this evening at practice. We go out there, you see where Bryce Heffner's at. You see if Olu Fashanu, who's not dressed on Saturday, see if he's out there. See if Landon Tengwall's in the mix. We'd love to see Landon Tengwall get mixed up in there. And I don't think he's an answer as a starter, but I just, you want to see what you have from him for a guy that was that highly touted of a prospect and then go from there. So, hopefully Penn State's able to assert its will, as you say. They have been more physical. As we mentioned last week, didn't run the ball half bad against Michigan, but the expectations at Penn State are a lot higher. So we will see as that continues to move along where that's going to go. And as you mentioned, the explosive plays in the run game are what's kind of keeping this one back. I mean, you can talk about average per carry and everything like that, but you add a 35, 40 yard run in there, that changes things dramatically when you're looking at that. And it's not like, this is the funny thing that when Saquon was here, fans from other programs would be like, well, he gets bottled up and then he has an 80-yard run. Well, those 80-yard runs count as part of what you're doing. So you would like to see that worked in. And again, Franklin hammers at home as much as he can. This is not an explosive offense. They want it to be an explosive offense. That's been the hallmark of what they've done over the last several years. And they're just flat out not getting it done in that area.
I know for a lot of people, the biggest takeaways from yesterday's press conference was more about the distraction aspect and the 2022 speculation stuff. To me, it was repeatedly, once again, hearing James Franklin point to the lack of explosive plays and him mentioning predominantly that's about what's happening on the ground and what's not happening on the ground. But overall, this offense isn't producing enough explosive plays. And I'm thinking, here you are in game 11 of the season, and the paramount issue that your head coach is pointing to on what's gone wrong and why you're at 6-4 is that there needs to be more explosive plays from an offense. You just made a huge offensive coordinator move for the second consecutive offseason, in the process firing the guy you hired in 2020. And yet this is the conversation right now as you finish the regular season. That's difficult to reconcile. And to me, of anything, the quarterback room and the fact that Franklin himself is calling for more explosiveness from this offense is really probably the most damning aspect. If people want to say what's gone wrong for James Franklin, it's back-to-back blockbuster offensive coordinator hires. I'm not pulling the plug on Mike Yurcich. I think he's a phenomenal mind, but they haven't found a way. They haven't found a way to recalibrate this thing since Sean Clifford got hurt. Quarterback room's a huge issue. That's on Franklin. That requires a lot of foresight. And they got to the finish line here, and they entered the season clearly with not the pieces in place that they needed at quarterback, it seems. Sean, the fact that they're talking about the offense as a hindrance right now and where Penn State wants to get to, what are we talking about? Where do we go from there with the conversation?
I agree. They should run the touchdown play more often is what you're getting at here.
I mean, come on, man. Because I don't want to hear – I know you're not going to say it, but I had people responding to me on Twitter. Well, you know, Yurcich can't block and run for guys. No one is going to feel bad about a lack of talent in Penn State's locker room right now. And also, who has been responsible for piecing together this roster, the entire staff? I know Yurcich just showed up to the scene, but there's this weird kind of disconnect I've heard where – well, you can't really put it all on the coaching staff because players got to make plays and players got to be better. They keep playing a lot of the same players game after game after game. And oh, by the way, this is the staff that handpicked these players out of high school or out of the transfer portal. So I don't really understand. It's not like they inherited this group. I just have a hard time figuring out. I know it's not as simple as dial up the touchdown play, but the offense has been an issue. We just went over the defense and the points they've given up. That needs to be enough to be better than 6-4.
Yeah, and that one goes to the top. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, that's the guy building this roster, or you know, that's the ripple effect of building this roster. And I don't know that there's an answer. The problem that I see here, too much reliance on Jahan Dotson, waiting for him to make the play, and then the guys that have missed plays in the last couple of weeks have also made plays for them this year. Keandre Lambert-Smith disappeared last week. He was a guy that, you know, has made some big catches. Those tight ends have been very, very much up and down. The running backs, more so in past years than in this year. So you've got guys that you think can play, and you're just not getting it there. Some of the execution, I agree with Franklin on this, particularly the execution has not been crisp. And then that's sort of, you kind of see an avalanche rolling down the hill where, you know, you drop a pass on first and 10, and all of a sudden you're behind. And then now you have to call the game differently. And it's a ripple effect. I think you nailed it, to be honest with you, because it starts at the top. It starts with Franklin, no doubt about it, but there's got to be accountability at every level there. I mean, Mike Yurcich, Phil Troutwine, these players that, you know, are in the wrong spot, you know, or the players that are in the right spot, just not, you know, executing. We mentioned the drops by the tight ends. They've been huge this year. That's probably swinging two games right there. So I don't really want to throw too much on anybody, but you can just throw a little bit on everybody, because it's been, I don't want to call it incompetence or anything like that, but it's been at times just one's been flat, the other's been good. You know, you flip that around the next game and you're not getting anything out of your wide receiver. You know, it's just, there's so much going on and so much just falling short that I don't know where you lay the foot of the blame, where you lay the blame at the foot of, unless it's James Franklin.
And I just think it's a difficult time if you say, okay, what was the big step forward for your offense in year one with Mike Yurcich after you made this, you know, not a brash decision, but it was a loud and bold decision by James Franklin last January. Yeah. So where did you make the biggest strides? I think saying, using that first five games and a quarter of Sean Clifford's season and saying, look how Sean Clifford bounced back, that's not much of a life preserver when you're dangling in the ocean right now, because that doesn't help you much. It was a great story. It was developing. But if that's what you're hanging your hat on as this is where this offense took a step forward, Sean Clifford had a big bounce back for five games and a quarter, that's really what it is right now, Sean. I mean, that's what people are going to point to, the job he did at quarterback. And that's good news because you're bringing in two good quarterbacks here and two potentially really good quarterbacks and the number one guy in the country. Quarterback is the main thing. It's the buzzy thing with Mike Yurcich, and the room has not been great by any means, but Clifford certainly has shown sign of improvements. But as we get to the finish line, it's like, okay, Jahan Dotson was going to do his thing. This is a guy who's going to blow up. He did it last year for Kirk Ciarrocca. If Kirk Ciarrocca is here again, I have faith that Jahan Dotson is going to have a big season. But the ground game has plummeted off the side of a cliff. Sean Clifford hasn't been able to rebound. They didn't have a solution when Sean Clifford was injured. Now he's not at full health again. And I'm just trying to find like the definitive signs of forward momentum gained by making that huge move to bring in Mike Yurcich, which James Franklin clearly pinned a lot of his fortunes to.
Yeah, and a lot of it doesn't make sense because you didn't fix Sean Clifford. There's still elements of his 2020 game in there, obviously, but you turned it around and did a really nice job with that. Got him, I don't know if I'd call it his maximum capability because of that injury against Iowa and everything like that, but got him to the point where he's beating Auburn, doing a really good job with that. But the rest of the offense didn't come along with it, which just doesn't make any sense. I don't know where the disconnect is. And, you know, a lot of that's going to go in the running game and things like that. And rightfully so. But it's just, if you told anybody this summer that you could turn around Sean Clifford, you'd think you got an offense that's going to score 35, 40 points a game because he's able to pull the strings and get guys where they need to be. It just hasn't been the case. And it's just, that's the real, mystery of this entire season. It's just what, where are the misses, the little misses and the big misses. You can see the big misses, but where are the little misses that make this a team that probably should be averaging 30 points a game and it's averaging what, 18 points a game or something like that.
When we envisioned what this offense might look like and where it could take off, it was more so, you know, the sled dogs in front of Sean Clifford, him sitting in the seat, and he's riding that, and he's got these great players that he can work around with. He's got an experienced offensive line. Instead, it's been Sean Clifford kind of bringing up the charge and pulling guys behind him. And I don't want to say Jahan Dotson because that's not the case. Jahan Dotson does his thing every game, but it's really been relying on Sean Clifford doing the heavy lifting if this team wants to have a shot to win. And this just has not worked out. And we got a lot to figure out with this offense. There's two more weeks. We'll talk about Penn State more in a moment, I promise. But let's discuss Rutgers right now and turn gears with our next guest. All right, let's talk about this matchup coming up on Saturday. The Rutgers Scarlet Knights at 5-5, traveling to Beaver Stadium, looking for their first win in this series since joining the Big Ten back in 2014. And Bobby Darin is joining us now from 24/7 Sports. Scarlet Nation has spent a long time covering these Rutgers Scarlet Knights. We had him on the podcast last year. Certainly a different scenario for college football and for both these teams. Once again, Bobby, we appreciate you hopping on with the Lions 24/7 podcast to preview this matchup.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
It's always good to hear from you. And the circumstances a little bit different right now for Rutgers in year number two under Greg Schiano. Coming in at 5-5, we'll talk about how they got there, but first things first, this is a team that is one win away from bowl eligibility, 2 weeks to do it. It starts with this matchup at Penn State, certainly a difficult task. What would that mean if they're able to get to six wins, and how difficult do you think it might be to get there?
I mean, you know, getting to six, it's going to be a challenge. Getting to six by beating Penn State would be like a dream scenario for Rutgers fans here. You know, it's been a long time since they've beaten Penn State, 1988. You know, Greg Schiano talked about it earlier this week. But, you know, just to get back to bowl eligibility after, you know, the Kyle Flood and Chris Ash eras, it was kind of some dark times. Just to get back to a bowl game would be a monumental feat in year two of this, what's considered a pretty massive rebuild for Greg Schiano. After Penn State, Rutgers has a season finale at home against Maryland. You know, looking at it on paper, that looks like a lot more manageable that game. But, you know, the players are excited being there at practice this week. You know, they're looking forward to the challenge. This team plays better on the road. Greg Schiano has not won a Big Ten game at home since he's been back. This year, both wins in the Big Ten came on the road at Illinois and at Indiana. So it's something about it. I asked the players about it yesterday, and they like playing on the road. They come in with a chip on their shoulder. They like the environment. So they're going in confident. I mean, and they know it's a tall task as well.
They're coming off a big win at Indiana, as you said. What was clicking for them? I mean, obviously you look at the box score and the highlights and everything like that, but what was really going for Rutgers in that game, and how did they just make it a decisive victory in what I think people expected a close game there?
Well, they had six turnovers. You know, Indiana shot themselves in the foot quite a few times. But Rutgers, when they don't turn the ball over, you know, they win. And when they get turnovers, they're a different team. And Greg Schiano spends a lot of time in practice, you know, drilling turnovers, ball security, you know, tells everybody the ball is the program. It's kind of metaphorical as well. But you know, they're at their best when they're humming on defense, because this is not an offense that's going to light up the scoreboard. So it starts at the line of scrimmage. When the defensive line plays well, it kind of transcends back to the second and third level. But, you know, for Rutgers to have a chance in any of these, you know, following games, Penn State and Maryland, they need to play well at the line of scrimmage. And as you guys know, last year when Penn State played Rutgers, Penn State just owned the line of scrimmage.
Bobby, I'm looking at Rutgers' schedule here. They start 3-0, non-conference wins over Temple, Syracuse, and Delaware. A close game ultimately on the road at Michigan, 20-13, but then they get smoked by Ohio State. Michigan State has their way with them. Northwestern wins 21-7. They rebound on the road, as you mentioned, at Illinois. They snap that 0-4 start in the Big Ten. Illinois was coming off of a win against Penn State. Was that kind of a pivoting moment for Greg Schiano in the program? And then how hard is it to really say that when they come home and lose 52-3 against Wisconsin? Where's the disconnect? What are we missing? Because that is sandwiched in between these Illinois and Indiana wins.
Well, the Illinois game was coming off a bye, so Rutgers had a week to heal up, kind of regroup, recharge, and Illinois was coming off that win over Penn State. It was kind of a perfect scenario for Rutgers in that situation. You know, it just set up well. You know how week-to-week college football, your momentum's a funny thing, and that was just set up well. And even with Indiana, you know, they played them at the right time of the year. Indiana, you know, not to take anything away from Rutgers' win, but Indiana was you know, They came out, they fumbled on the first possession, and it just seemed like they went into a shell after that. But, you know, it's set up favorably, and, you know, Rutgers got some breaks. That Michigan game, they played really well, and then, you know, Ohio State and Wisconsin, they're just bad matchups, and there's just too much of a talent gap in those games. Northwestern, they just did not play well. It was, you know, the seventh straight game. They were looking forward to a bye week, and that was bad timing, and they just did not play a good game.
Bobby, just where is this rebuild? You mentioned it earlier, but stacking Chris Ash on top of Kyle Flood was not a good recipe for anybody. Where are they at, and how much has the talent that Greg Schiano, the younger guys on the roster, how much has the talent that he's brought in sort of made up that gap? Are they ahead of schedule right now?
I think they are. I mean, you know, I think they played a little over their heads last year with the three wins. You know, they started off with a win against Michigan State in the first game of that COVID season, but Michigan State turned the ball over seven times in that game. You know, they played Maryland, and Maryland had some COVID guys, you know, guys out for COVID, and you know, they took advantage of that. So they won some games, and I think they gave people some expectations that were higher than what was realistic, because it was a massive rebuild. I mean, Chris Ash was recruiting guys that, you know, the guys would transfer out and they wouldn't be starting on 1AA teams. And, you know, you'd see guys going to D2 teams, and the talent just wasn't there. So he tried to go into the transfer portal, had nine guys the first year, five this past year. You know, a few of them worked out, a lot more really didn't. You had some serviceable guys, but it just takes time. And one of the biggest problems with the rebuild is they really had to revamp the offensive line, and there's no quick fix for that. So that's been a work in progress. You know, you have guys starting on the offensive line now that were defensive linemen, you know, when they came in. Troy Rainey was starting, and he was a defensive lineman that came in as a Bowling Green recruit last year, a Bowling Green flip, you know. Ireland Brown started this year, and he's now a starting left guard. He started at defensive tackle and played on a defensive line against Temple. Now he started the last four games in the interior for Rutgers. So you're kind of seeing them trying to piece together something formidable on that offensive line. They're playing better, but as you know, it takes time to grow that.
Last year, Penn State traveled to Piscataway at 1-5. They had picked up their first win at Michigan. We're looking to gain momentum, but felt like a pretty sweet spot for Rutgers to be able to pick up a win of any kind against the Nittany Lions program that they have been able to do that against. Instead, Penn State outscores them 17-0 in the first half, ends up winning the matchup 23-7, really leaning on the ground game late, windy day. How disappointing was that moment in year one? And what are you hearing from Greg Schiano about that R word that he's mentioned a few times? And I'm not talking Rutgers, but in terms of their relationship with Penn State.
Greg tries to focus everything at hand. You know, he'll say, you know all the history with him there and everything, and he has a lot of respect for the program, and that's where he got to start as his first assistant coach. So, he knows it's going to be a tough task, and I mean, you know, there's these coaches scheme all week. You know how many hours they work, but there's really nothing that can replace their big guys pushing your big guys around, and basically that's what it's going to come down to. But it's exciting for the team to travel up there, for him to go there. Like I said, it's a lot of nostalgia, but they know it's going to be a tough task because, you know, it's going to come down to just moving those big guys.
Yeah, the R word, by the way, just to clarify, with Sean on the podcast, of course, got to say rivalry, because Shiano was asked about, can you create some kind of rivalry? Penn State, I don't think interested at all in that. Rutgers will be very interested, but Shiano mentioned a few times early on this week, coming out of last week, that requires some wins on both sides to create something like that. Right now, do you feel like, is Rutgers equipped to come up here and score points against Penn State? That is the question for me when I look at the last few games. Even when they've won games against Illinois and Indiana, they don't go for more than 140 passing yards from their starting quarterback. They don't go for 100 yards from their starting running back. So where are the points going to come from if they can hit the road here? Because the Nittany Lions have been streaky offensively, but defensively been quite consistent from game one through game 10.
That's a good question, you know, and every week you try and find it. You know, they weren't averaging a heck of a lot of points coming into Indiana. I think it was 11 points in the Big Ten contest per game. So it was tough. Points are just really tough to come by. And part of the reason, as I mentioned, was that offensive line. You know, you don't get a lot of time to throw the ball. You don't have room to run the ball. I mean, what are you going to do? And, some of the receivers struggle with separation. No, Vedrill's a good quarterback. He's in terms of being a tough guy, a leader, but he doesn't have that cannon of an arm where he's going to just fit balls in tight windows. And it's going to be tough. And you know, to touch on your point about the rivalry, I'm sorry, Greg said you have to start winning games. You have to start being competitive, because everybody always asks, who's going to be your rival? Who's going to be your rival? He said, we can't force a rivalry. We have to have some good games. And people would try and say Maryland and Rutgers because it's East Coast, whatever. But when it comes down to scoring, Ty, it's tough to come by. I mean, you know, they ran some, you know, a lot of trick plays last year in there, gadget plays. Their second best receiver is out for the season, and Aaron Cruikshank, you know, the Wisconsin transfer. It's going to be tough going to find the end zone on Saturday.
You go through the stats, Bo Melton really jumps out. Just accepted a Senior Bowl invitation yesterday. He's had a productive career at Rutgers, 48 catches this year, 3 touchdowns. I mean, is that going to have to be the guy? I mean, they seem like they tried to force feed him a bit last year, had a little bit of success, but is he going to have to be the guy that has to break Penn State?
He's easily the top playmaker, and yeah, he's going to, you know, have to have a big day. I mean, there's no question about it. He's their go-to guy, and he's really developed under this new staff. I mean, came in as a 4-star and didn't have the numbers, but the offense was just bleak, really bleak before Greg Schiano arrived. And Melton's really kind of come out of his shell, and he's really played well, and he's going to be the guy they really look to quite a bit throughout the day in the passing game. And he's really one of the only guys that can stretch the field and make those big downfield plays.
What do the Scarlet Knights bring to the field right now defensively? What is working? What is consistently not working? And how is their punter part of that whole plan on defense?
The punter is, you know, every week I ask about him, and he's just, and even ask Greg Schiano, he's phenomenal. I mean, this guy,
Franklin raved about him yesterday in the press conference.
Oh, he's really good. I mean, he just, his positioning of the ball, and you know, if he sees he has some time to kick it, he'll wait and run to the side and boot it. So, like, he's leading the nation in net punting. So, not one touchback this year. So when you watch him, he's kind of, I always say, he's surgical with it. He's a weapon for them. You know, prior to Shadow's arrival, he was the best guy on the team. We're writing about the punter every week. Imagine that. He's really good. Defensively, it starts up front. If they can control or get some push at the line of scrimmage, then it's like I said, it filters back. The secondary's had some injuries. It's been a work in progress this season. Linebackers have played well, but it really starts up front. If they get pushed around in those trenches, it kind of filters back, and it's going to be a long day. But you're starting to see some younger guys emerge. Aaron Lewis, defensive end, you know, was a Michigan transfer. He's starting to play really well. Keontae Hamilton, true freshman, who's also a nationally renowned wrestler, is really playing well at the defensive tackle position. So you're starting to see guys in there. Julius Turner is a six-year guy, makes a lot of plays. Smaller, undersized, but plays this cock noses, and they slant him, and he's been doing really well under Schiano. So if those guys can get some semblance of a push, that's where it begins. But if Penn State comes out and just starts pushing them backwards, forget about it.
What about the back end of that defense? I'm looking at the Wisconsin box score, which was not pretty for anybody, obviously. But Wisconsin threw for 274 yards, which is like a normal program throwing for about 400. So how does that secondary and the back seven in terms of giving up big plays? And is that the thing that, you know, Penn State is going to go at? You think that is that what you think Penn State is going to go after with Jahan Dotson and Parker Washington, those guys?
I think they'll try to expose it. But I think, you know, their focus, I would think, would be on the ground and then try and open up the passing game. But, you know, Max Melton is the best corner in the secondary, Bo Melton's brother. He's a guy who's been, you know, he had a three-game suspension and then had an injury, was out a game, but he's been the most consistent corner. But some of the other guys have been victimized in the pass game. And like I said, you had some injuries back there. But I could see them, you know, if they start running the ball, open things up. And Trey Avery's been a guy that's been victimized all season long with big plays. Even Indiana had a 46-yard play on him last week to set up their only score of the day. Michigan State was running wild on him. So I could see them targeting him quite a bit throughout the day.
How about Rutgers' ability to apply pressure on the opposing quarterback? Only 16 sacks through 10 games. That number does not jump out by any means. I think it's 12th in the Big Ten Conference. But we're talking about a Sean Clifford who's coming out of a game in which he was beat up pretty badly. Not really sure how functional he'll be as a runner, as an escape artist. What can Rutgers do? And has that ultimately maybe been an issue for them defensively, not getting to the quarterback?
Well, they don't have a prolific pass rusher that's going to demand double teams and free up other guys and be a guy who's going to get multiple sacks per game. But so what they do is try to disguise blitzers, bring pressure from different angles, and really try and win the numbers game in that regard. So you'll see them try to be creative with the schemes when it comes to bringing pressure. It'll come from different areas, different guys. And there's not just one guy to watch for, but rather it's a schematic thing. And Graciano's always been pretty good at dialing up blitzes of that nature. He hasn't had, even in the first time around, you probably remember back, Ty, he hasn't had that guy that was that super pass rusher that you were like, wow, he's had some decent players, but, you know, not that first round NFL draft pick defensive end who's just, you know, going to destroy offenses. So you'll see him try and disguise things and be creative and crafty with it.
Six of those sacks came against Syracuse. Is that kind of what the formula was there, just to go off everybody? Or, I mean, DeVito obviously not the most fleet of foot back there, but still six sacks out of 16 jumps out from looking at the game to game.
Bringing pressure, thinking back, like I can't remember the one guy who was like, wow, he was really killing it that game. And, you know, it was different pressure from different guys. You know, sometimes guys coming free because they were overloading one side, and Syracuse failed to pick up a lot of those blitzes. It was more of a, hey, I'm going to beat you at the chess game here, and my guys are going to win because we have a numbers advantage.
You mentioned that last year the offensive line for Rutgers let them down against Penn State. I think that's probably been the case the last few times they've met. Rutgers has really had a problem generating momentum and generating drives. Has that changed in notable ways this year, or do you still look at the offensive line as an albatross in this matchup for Rutgers?
Well, they were mixing and matching. First 7 of 8 games, you had a different alignment of offensive linemen. Some of the same guys started, but they were moving them around. So the last few games, you've had the same guy starting. So you're starting to see them, you know, start to gel a little bit. But I mentioned, you know, you had some of these guys. I mean, their starting right tackle, Holland Pierce, came in as a walk-on. He's a redshirt freshman, came in at 400 pounds and dropped to about 320, 330, and you know he's starting for the first time at right tackle, so there's a learning curve there. You know, I mentioned Troy Rainey and Ireland Brown. These are guys that were former defensive linemen. You know, it's as early as this year. Your left tackle, Raekwon O'Neal, is playing a lot better. He was injured earlier in the season. Very athletic guy. Had like over 30 offers coming out of Conway, South Carolina.
He got a touchdown too, doesn't he?
Yeah, he had last week. They had, well, it wasn't actually a pass. It was a lateral. It was one of those ones that, you know, just behind the line of scrimmage, and he ran it. But very athletic, and he's been playing a lot better since he's returned a few weeks ago from his injury. He was, you know, he was playing banged up. He had that bye week to get off to heal up, and He's been playing a lot better. So this line is starting to gel. Now, they're by no means a group that's going to be considered elite in the Big Ten at this point, but you have a lot of, you know, you have a decent amount of youth on there, and these guys are starting, it's starting to click for them a little bit. So they're getting better. Like I said, it's going from Indiana to Penn State is going to be a huge challenge. So I'm curious to see how they stack up, but you know, it's a lot to expect them to go in and push those guys around.
All right, Bobby, it's Wednesday morning. I get it. We've both got a lot to learn about our teams on the beat this week. But when you look at this matchup in a few days from now, where do you lean at this point in terms of what kind of game it will become?
I think it's going to be one of those, you know, ground games, cold. I don't know what the weather. Did you guys look at the weather yet?
It's cold. Probably cold. It's November in Central Pennsylvania.
Okay. Well, it's funny because, you know, I'm looking tomorrow. It's going to be 70 and the weather's schizophrenic here, you know. So, but I figure it's going to be one of those, you know, those fall November games, of, you know, gray, cold day that where you run the football. And you know, on Rutgers' side, it's just – it's tough to compensate for another line that's bigger and stronger. And I think they'll wear them down. Penn State's just going to wear them down. You'll see much of – similar to what was last year. And Rutgers has a tough time scoring points. Every week I'll do these previews and I'm thinking, what am I going to pick for a score? Because how are they going to score? They scored 38 points last week, but you know, six turnovers, Indiana kind of rolled over after a while. And you know, not like I said, not to take anything away from Rutgers, but you know, they're not a team that's going to put up 38 points every week. So I think it's going to be tough to score points for Rutgers to hang around. They're going to have to get some turnovers. They're going to have to do a, you know, bend, don't break defense in some instances and, you know, force a field goal here. You know, don't let Penn State in the end zone. But it starts up front. Like I said, that defensive line, if that defensive line plays well, Rutgers can hang around for a little bit.
Well, we appreciate your perspective, Bobby. We'll see what happens on Saturday. Thanks for your coverage from ScarletNation.com at 24/7 Sports. We'll talk to you next year. Another matchup awaits.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks again to Bobby for breaking things down on the Rutgers beat. Sean, a few more notes here from Penn State land before we talk five-star mailbag. Senior Bowl invites extended and accepted for three different members of the Nittany Lions roster. Jaquan Brisker, it's his second time picking up a Senior Bowl invite. Arnold Ebikade, whose stock is soaring, 8.5 sacks now on the season. And then Jesse Lucchetta, who's got a decision to make, much like Brisker did this time last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's a good step forward for those guys. I wouldn't be surprised to see another invite or two accepted. But yeah, hopefully we can get Jim Nagy on here to talk a little bit Senior Bowl. But yeah, I mean, those guys obviously have really, really helped themselves. I mean, you think about the move that all three of these guys made. I mean, Brisker coming back, a mid to late round pick last year, kind of definitely going to move up, going to test well. Ebikade, man, that move, unbelievable move for him. I know that the people have been asking about, you know, he still has a year left technically, but I don't understand why he would come back. I don't think he's going to be the guy that's going to vault himself into the first round. Now Penn State would love to have him back. But I don't think that was going to happen. He's just been tremendous for Penn State. And as I said on Twitter yesterday, that's a great opportunity for Penn State to sell that and get another 1 year rental of a guy like that, that can really help himself out and help his visibility as a draft prospect. And then Jesse Lucchetta made the move from linebacker to defensive end. And, you know, he's a pro level guy that can stick there at defensive end as an edge rusher. I still think he has a decision to make. Again, I've been on the fence or been on the side of the fence that says he is going to go, but I think that ideally he could be that Brisker guy. He could come back. He's a late round pick right now. He could come back and really help himself be a full-time starter. I mean, that's the thing that you forget about with Jesse Lucchetta is he's still split starts with Nick Tarbert all this year. And he's been effective in doing, he's been more effective of the two players, but he hasn't been a full-time starter for Penn State. So I would love to see him for his stock come back. But again, I've been on the other side of the fence thinking that he's going to go. He's going to turn 23 next year as well. So all those three guys certainly deserve it. You know, they've really helped themselves. And surprise, surprise, they're on the defensive side of the ball.
Until proven otherwise, I'm just going to assume that AK's trajectory is going to keep swinging upward all the way to the draft because this kid came in sprinting in State College, Sean. And, I mean, he's got a great shot. He needs a sack and a half over the next three games to be the first double digit sack artist for Penn State in a 6 year span.
Do you remember the conversation we did, or 24/7 Sports did the transfer rankings, and as everything was coming out, and they didn't reach out to us for feedback. And we had one of our bosses on the phone. I'm like, what are we doing anyways? And so the initial rankings had Ebikidi pretty low, and they had Antonio Shelton at like 25 overall. I'm like, guys, what are we doing here? And eventually we got through to the people that were doing the rankings. Like, this kid is a stud. He's going to be very good, and he's going to be drafted next year. No doubt about it. And that's really kind of how it played out. So that was just that was a fun conversation that we had. That was back in the winter or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's really made the most of it. And you got to credit him, credit John Scott too. I mean, it's not mm-hmm. easy to bring in a guy, and he's a very talented guy. No doubt. AK has been all over the place, for Penn State this year, but to bring in a guy that you don't know and make him a star, John Scott is going to have three defensive ends drafted, maybe even four. If Luketta comes out, four defensive ends drafted in the last 2 years.
Yeah, and by the way, John Scott was heaping a lot of praise on Jesse Luketta and kind of just saying it's been eye-opening to watch how far he's come since week one at Wisconsin when he was asked to play a lot right away to where he was. And you're right, though. It's imagine him with a full year of focus on defensive end, because he was banged up in the spring. He wasn't out there in pads in the spring. This transition truly started for him on the field in August. And, you think about what if he has a full winter and spring in that room. There's a lot to gain there. And I think with Luketta, it's going to be a conversation that he has with the staff and his family and everybody. But I'm very curious to hear, where Penn State comes from with their plan, because he was still playing linebacker last week. He played quite a bit of Mike linebacker. Is that something that you would kind of disattach Luketta from? Would you keep him as that hybrid thing? Because they've kind of gone a week to week here. Do they have guys available? Who are they playing? Is that how you want to use Jesse Luketta moving forward? Or do you have a conversation and say, hey, let's fixate on what's going to be best for your long-term future? This is going to be that role, and you're going to play there for 12, 13, 14 games.
Well, it certainly would solidify defensive end pretty well. Yeah. But you know those numbers at linebacker are not good in terms of the experience that they have coming back with Ellis Brooks moving on. And the other thing with Luketta is it's not like he's leaving early. I mean, he's a fourth year mm-hmm. senior, so he's played out that this would be his typical eligibility. But with that COVID year, you've got an opportunity to split that up and really help yourself. But I'm curious to see that's one of the intriguing offseason storylines. Again, I come down on the fence that I think he'll go, but they can make an intriguing pitch to him that he could come back and be a star.
And James Franklin said on Tuesday, yeah, maybe don't pay too much attention to that senior day list this year, because there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes in terms of who still wants to play college football and who may be ready to move on. We'll talk about that list and kind of break down a little more of that dynamic next episode, when we also give you our final thoughts and predictions on the Penn State Rutgers matchup. Five-star mailbag time, Sean, and it takes us to the recruiting trail. Interesting question coming our way. With Katron Allen using an official visit at Florida State last week, what does that mean for his status in this Penn State class, considering the staff's standard policy with committed recruits?
Well, the hand quotes here, standard policy changes a little bit for everybody, doesn't it? You look at what Katron Allen did. He took an official visit to Florida State last weekend, but you got to consider the circumstances here. Bunch of IMG kids were going to Florida State. It's interesting to me because the feedback that we've gotten from the Florida State side of things is they're not all that hot on Katron Allen. They love Javonte Barnes, who's a phenomenal back from Las Vegas that Penn State actually offered and had recruited as well. So that's an interesting you got to take that into account. And I think, Penn State has enough contacts in Florida with the Florida State guys to know where he sits on their board. So you take that into account. This is not a Jordan Allen situation. I mean, they knew that Katron Allen was taking the trip to Florida State. They didn't want him to. But sometimes you got to pack up and you got to understand the situation and the scenario and go with that. Jordan Allen, they found out by reading a 24/7 Sports report that he was going to pop up at Ole Miss over the weekend or over that weekend. And let's be honest, not all these guys are, I don't want to say created equal, but not all these guys are on the same plane here. I mean, you're talking about a really good running back from a place like IMG, and that's going to, carry some weight as well. Not all positions are the same. I know Tyler had referenced before we went on about RJ Adams, the former offensive lineman who ended up at Kentucky from Northern Virginia. He took a trip to Kentucky, and Penn State has essentially cut him loose as well. Well, I mean, he's a guard. He's a center. You can find a lot of those guys out there. We're not getting into that discussion with Penn State's offensive line, but he's a guard. He's a center. If he's an offensive tackle, maybe that's a different story. Catron Allen's a running back. There's, you know, he's a really good running back. And although you do have Nick Singleton, you don't want to lose him, but you still probably treat that a little bit different than you would a linebacker, you know, an interior offensive lineman, somebody like that. So it's a funny situation. That standard policy is not the same for everybody. And as long as it's understood on both sides what they're trying to do, you can work through that. Now, I think Penn State does keep Allen, as we're hearing right now. You know, again, I don't know that Florida State is the biggest threat to Penn State in this one. A lot of IMG guys going. There's just a lot of things that go into this situation. And Penn State, you know, they kind of get a little leverage here in that they can keep talking to their longtime prospects, Ramon Brown at Virginia Tech, who Justin Fuente just got fired yesterday. So you keep that iron in the fire with Ramon Brown. George Pettaway at UNC, they almost got him up for a visit right before he committed to North Carolina in September or October earlier this season. So you've kept those lines of communication open, and you do that with every position because you just don't know what's going to come up. This is the time of year where guys start sneaking visits, guys start popping up at other schools. And Catron Allen has gone elsewhere. Zane Durant was at Miami a couple of weeks ago. And of course, we know Jordan Allen was a guy that popped up elsewhere. I mean, Jordan Allen was not hard to jettison. Those other two guys, maybe a little bit of a different story.
4 weeks from today, Sean, the early sign starts across college football. So that countdown is on, and that's hanging in the background in a big way here. We spent a lot of time this episode talking about everything going on, swirling around the program. We didn't even mention that they're trying to balance what is currently the Big Ten's top-ranked recruiting class and get that to the finish line on signing day. It's not an easy thing to do when the on-field product is sliding like it has been. So 4 weeks from today, Sean, we'll find out.
I can't wait. Cannot wait.
We'll be with you on Thursday for our final episode before that Rutgers-Penn State kickoff, breaking down the matchup, talking about our predictions, and whatever else pops up from Wednesday night practice. You can catch all of our coverage from our practice availability, from upcoming player calls, and James Franklin's post-practice conversation up on Lions247.com. Check all that out. Follow us on YouTube as well. Catch every episode there at Lions247. Thanks to our producer, Lance Glenn. Thanks again to Bobby Darin, and thanks to my co-host, Sean Fitz. I am Tyler Donahue. This is the Lions 24/7 podcast.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick Six, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick Six has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick Six is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.